Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at as we get into our final hour of this week's Worth the Shows. We'll be back with you coming up on Monday from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock as we roll on getting ready for what's going to be a really fun sports weekend. Great college football this weekend, obviously playoff baseball. The Padres and the Dodgers are going to be getting underway in just mere moments, and we will continue to keep you updated on that one as it goes along. Winner is going to match up against the Mets in the NLCS, and we'll see how that all ends up playing out, but has been a fun playoff run so far. So this happened earlier in the week, and this is one of those things where I wanted to talk about it, and I don't really know, until it plays out, we don't really know how big of a deal it's going to be, but at the very least, for those of you who follow along with college athletics, it's going to change the verbiage that we use when it comes to players committing to colleges. The NCAA Division I Council earlier this week approved the immediate elimination of the National Letter of Intent program. So that doesn't exist anymore. You always hear about high school kids signing their National Letter of Intent. You think about all those signing ceremonies where the kid's got the the three hats in front of him and puts one of them on, and then what does he do? He puts his head down and he signs something. It's always the National Letter of Intent. Some history on that, courtesy of ESPN. The National Letter of Intent program was established in 1964. It has existed as the formal binding agreement between prospective athletes and college programs for 60 years, but no more. This was done immediately. There are no more National Letters of Intent when it comes to Division I college athletics. Instead, the National Letter of Intent is being replaced by a new financial aid agreement, and it's going to provide many of the same core functions as National Letter of Intent. However, it is likely to be tied to a contract related to an impending revenue sharing model across college athletics. All right, so that's where I was trying to get to here, because it, on a surface level, you go, okay, they're getting rid of the National Letter of Intent, but they're putting something else in, and basically it's the exact same thing, and they're calling it something else. What's the big deal, Matt? Who cares? And you're right. If it's just that, who does care? It's not really that big of a deal. For legal reasons, you have to call something new. What this tells you is we are not even close to being finished with the changes in college athletics. And I've been talking about this a lot over the last year or so. At some point, you have to get to where you're going. And you don't always know. You might be in the, to keep this stupid analogy going, you might be in the car driving and you don't even know how long it's going to be until you get somewhere. But you have to have that feeling of knowing that eventually the car ride's going to end and you are going to be at a destination. And I'm not convinced that that exists right now in college athletics. I mean, when you think about what really started our mass changes in college athletics, 10 years ago? And it all started with conference realignment. And since then, it has moved into a number of different areas. Name, image, likeness, obviously being a big part of that. We have seen unionization at times threatened, at times actually implemented. I mean, there's just been so many things. Kids are getting paid big time money now to play college athletics. The haves and have nots are separating out more and more and more. I've thought recently that, okay, we're getting close. We're getting close to a point where the realignment stuff isn't going to happen as often. How these kids are going to get paid is going to be set. We're going to know what kind of money it takes to run an athletic department and run an NIL collective. And all these things are just going to get figured out. And finally, college athletics is going to be what college athletics is going to be moving forward, with some small tweaks here or there. But then when I read about this, and I read that they are putting this in place, and the new financial agreement is likely to be tied to a contract related to an impending revenue sharing model across college athletics, that tells me that we are still a really long way from settling into whatever college athletics is actually going to look like moving forward. Because when we start talking about revenue sharing, to a certain extent, that's easy at big. If you're an SEC school or you're a Big Ten school and you need to start doing some revenue sharing with some of the student athletes, that can get figured out. But at other places, that's going to become a lot more challenging. How long is it going to take until the first time at a major conference school that you've got a kid getting paid more than the head coach from the university? Like that, the thing they've been trying to avoid this whole time, they've been trying to make all this money that these kids bring in to essentially be third-party money. And when I hear about a revenue-sharing model, to me, that's not third-party money anymore. That's direct money from the university. So that's where this thing is still probably going. And then it gets a whole lot tougher to tell the difference between pro athletes and college athletes. And not that I have a problem with it. Sometimes when I talk about this, I feel like the way I'm talking, it sounds like I'm anti-NIL and anti-kids getting paid money. There are some things about it that bother me. And I blame the NCAA totally. They got stuck behind. They were never thinking in a forward manner. And then all of a sudden, they basically got pushed to do a bunch of things through court decisions. I appreciate this. This is actually something that's forward thinking. They think they're eventually going to be going to some type of revenue sharing model. Well, put this in place now so you're not stuck behind the eight ball. If they would have been forward thinking for the last 20 years instead of just trying to preserve a model that was clearly dying, they probably wouldn't be in the spot that they're in right now, but they've been forced into this spot. But this is just another part of college athletics that's changing. So if you were a college athlete and you remember signing your national letter of intent, you can know that if your kid's going to become a college athlete, they are not going to have a national letter of intent to sign. It's going to be something that's going to look a little bit different. Pretty big college football game tomorrow for Illinois, not because of who they're playing. They're playing a team that they should beat. They're matched up against a Purdue squad that is not especially good. But big for Illinois that they can attempt to really prove that their start to the season is legit and that they deserve to be a top 25 team. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are set to be joined by Jason Langendorf. He covers Illinois football in addition to a number of other things, writes about them for Sports Illustrated, and he's going to join us in just a moment. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We take you till 8 o'clock this evening. I'll tell you what, it's a kind of a sneaky, important game for Illinois football tomorrow. They match up against Purdue. Now, they're 4-1. Their one loss, their last time out, when they lose to Penn State 21-7. They were coming off that great win against Nebraska before then. But when you look at their next two games after tomorrow, they play Michigan and Oregon. So if they don't beat Purdue, there's the possibility that what started as a 4-0 start could kind of go very bad very quickly. But they are expected to win tomorrow. We're very happy to welcome onto the program. He writes about the Fighting Illini in addition to a bunch of other things. You can read a lot of his Illini work at SI. .com, the Illinois Fighting Illini section of Sports Illustrated's website. He is Jason Langendorf. You follow him on Twitter at Jason Langendorf. Jason, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm good.
This really do you agree kind of with my premise there that this one's a really important one for Illinois tomorrow if they want to put together the kind of season that they would like?
Well, I mean, absolutely. It's I think the way that the season is shaped up, they're 4-1 now. They're in a position to, I mean, realistically, if they can win this game and they can beat Michigan, you're talking about, potential in the college football playoff, which no one was thinking about before the season. So, if we're thinking along those lines, then yeah, you got to beat Purdue because, one foot in front of the next, if they can't beat the Boilers, they're not going to beat Michigan anyway. So, it's a must win. I think the good news for Illinois is that, it's I don't want to say it's an easy win, but it is not this sort of must win that we usually talk about. This is one that they ought to be able to kind of check the box off right away.
And the news coming out of Purdue is that their quarterback, Hudson Card, is going to miss the game as a result of being in concussion protocol. And with that, it feels like maybe that sets things up even more for Illinois. But, I mean, we saw this past weekend with so many ranked teams losing. We saw, obviously, the Alabama loss. You have to take your opponent seriously.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and the thing is I think if you want to fish for a reason why something wild might happen, and you know, if I'm Brad Bielema, you know, I'm motivating my guys. You know, you're going to talk about Vandy, Bama. You're going to fall back on some of these things. You might say, hey, listen, we don't know this kid. You know, he was a redshirt freshman. Ryan Brown, freshman quarterback, brand new, you know, he's thrown the ball, I think maybe 11 times this season. And nobody knows what you're going to get with him. Now, I don't think he's going to turn around Purdue's season starting tomorrow. But I mean, you could feasibly say, all right, well, you know, we don't know this guy. We haven't prepared for this guy. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen. Purdue's had Illinois' number lately. You know, you can look at all those factors, but given that tomorrow's, you know, the conditions are going to be a little gusty, it sounds like, you're throwing this kid into the fire. And Illinois got one of the sort of most, I would say, most underrated defenses in the country, certainly in the Big Ten. It's not looking good for an upset here.
You wrote about the running back situation for Illinois, where they've got four guys that they can hand it off to, and they've all shown the ability to run and run well, but all of their skill sets are a little bit different as well. You're looking at a Purdue defense that doesn't do especially well against the run. You've got all these guys that can attack a defense in very different ways. It feels like this is a great opportunity for Illinois to have some success on the ground, like they've largely had this year.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those games where Bielema really, really tries to knock heads and get after it, kind of old school. You know, let these guys loose, keep them all fresh, just keep pounding Purdue at every opportunity, because you're going to, you know, you control the ball, you keep your defense off the field, you keep everybody fresh and sharp, and you give Purdue fewer chances to create something from nothing and for fewer surprises to happen. But it's also just a chance for them to get well. The run game has been a little bit lagging compared to a lot of the rest of the pieces in Champaign right now. But, you know, again, this is a chance for them to get well.
How are you surprised? I mean, very few people, I think, expected the team to be in the top 25 and 4-1 through five games. But what is your level of surprise with the amount of success they've had and the way they've won some of these games? I keep going back to that Nebraska game. The character that they showed finding a way to win that game was so impressive.
Yeah, it really was. I think, you know, I'm surprised. I will say that. I've seen quite a bit of bad Illinois football over the years, and particularly lately. And I don't know that anyone really saw this coming, certainly not the opportunity that's ahead of them right now. And if they can, you know, kind of reach out with both hands and grab it, I mean, that's what we've seen them do so far. They're taking advantage of the moment. You know, Penn State notwithstanding, that wasn't the best look for the Illini, but they also, if you think about how many times they kind of shot themselves in the foot, and this goes against what you were talking about, sort of, you know, being tough in the moment, being, you know, disciplined, playing smart. You know, that needs to be done, especially if you're going to be on the road and you want to compete against teams like Penn State. But if they can cut that out and do what they've done the rest of the season, they're extremely competitive. They have been competitive against top 25 teams already this season.
Is there something to be said for when you bring in a coach to a situation that's not a great situation, and especially if that coach has a pedigree, and I would argue that Brett Bielema absolutely does, that you sure. give him time to let it work, because maybe the seat was a little bit warm even last year, but they gave him time, they gave him resources. I don't think he's been worried about his job, and not that the season is over. There's still a lot that they need to accomplish this year, but it really feels like this is the culmination of him establishing his program.
Yeah, it does feel like that, and I do agree. I think, particularly when it comes to college football, you know, you can't expect an instant turnaround, particularly in the Big Ten, when you're dealing with so many other teams that are recruiting at that level. You've got to have the horses, you've got to have the talent. That takes time, and when you're trying to build a winning culture and instill some of these you know, some of these principles, some of these characteristics into your team, I mean, that takes time. And it doesn't always work. You know, you can talk about culture all you want, but Bielema definitely is a guy who's had that success in the past. It looks like he's starting to turn this team around. And you know, I think Purdue, even though it's not an accurate litmus test to see where they are, I mean, If Illinois goes out there and really buries them tomorrow, they've got a huge group of recruits coming in yet again tomorrow to kind of take a look and you know, look under the hood. If they can impress in front of these kids and start building that next group of Illini players, I mean, that's the sort of stuff that you build programs on. They just got to keep the momentum going.
Jason Langendorf, he writes about the University of Illinois football program for SI. If you just get to the Illinois Fighting Illini on SI page, you'll see a lot of Jason's work right there. You can also follow him on Twitter at Jason Langendorf. Jason, thanks for taking some time. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You bet. That's Jason Langendorf joining us here on the program, and we appreciate a few moments with him. Biggest game this weekend, arguably out of the Big Ten, Ohio State and Oregon. Isn't it? It's still weird saying that's a Big Ten matchup, by the way. It's going to, like, sometimes when teams leave one conference and go to another, like when Texas A&M went to the SEC, and I'm a Big 12 guy, but when Texas A&M went to the SEC, immediately it was a fit. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. They look like an SEC team. Oregon does not feel like a Big Ten team for me, and it's going to take a little while for me to feel more comfortable with that one. But the biggest game in the nation, arguably, will take place out of the Big Ten Conference and in Eugene, Oregon tomorrow, where number 2 Ohio State and number 3 Oregon are going to match up against each other. And this game obviously has national championship implications. For all we know, this could be a preview of this year's national title game, depending on what happens as we continue down the line. All right, when we come back, we're going to switch gears and get back to talking baseball. Our own Kevin Wheeler is set to join us in just a moment. We're going to talk through what Derek Gould reported today, that the Cardinals are really working to have their minor league pitchers, starting pitchers specifically, have those guys throw more innings to help them be better prepared for the big leagues. I think it's a really good thing the Cardinals are doing. What is the implication and the impact of it? We'll discuss that coming up in just a moment. Kevin Wheeler joins us after this. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. We continue to take you until 8 o'clock this evening. And look who it is. We're welcoming our good friend Kevin Wheeler. You hear him during the DGS. You hear him occasionally during TIPM. He's part of the roundtables that we've had going here recently.
So you're saying I talk a lot.
Yes, you do talk a lot.
That's because I like to.
Former host of this very program.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
I don't know. I feel like, you know, whenever we get the chance to do this, it's awesome. Because people don't know this. We do this off the air literally every day.
We text every night.
Yeah. But we also talk about, like, I'll come into the sports office during a break. Like, hey, let's talk about. So, like, we might as well just take it to the air, right?
You're the person now that if it's 12:15 in the morning and I've got a thought,
you know where to go.
Yep. I don't even think twice.
Nope.
There's very few people in my life that I don't think twice about texting after midnight, and you're one of them.
Yeah, if it's before 2 a.m., I'm probably up.
Yeah.
Most likely.
Well,
sometimes I get a little tired and I go to bed at 1:30.
Okay, fair enough. And I am a late person as well.
Yep.
So up late thinking about baseball. Derek Gould had something in the Post-Dispatch STL today. Came out on the website today. I assume it'll be a print version tomorrow, I guess. It focused in on the Cardinals' desire to have minor league pitchers pitch more, specifically starters, pitching deeper into games. And we have seen a trend, Kevin, over the last, I don't know, 10-plus years of kid gloves on pitchers in the minor leagues. And I think that has resulted in very often pitchers not actually being ready for the grind that is Major League Baseball when they get to Major League Baseball. Cardinals still have so many things they need to get better at.
Yeah.
But I read this, and I didn't even realize. It's interesting. They led the four levels in starting pitching innings this year. I was not aware that this was something that they were focusing in on, but I'm glad that they are.
It is, and you know, it's funny because it sounds like it's old school, but I think it's going to be one of the major assets moving forward. The teams that can actually develop starting pitchers that can go six and seven innings, that can get through a lineup three times, maybe not every time, but at least more often than not. The trend has been away from it, and I'm happy the Cardinals are doing this. I think it's great. This is something that puts the Cardinals ahead of a lot of other teams. This is an innovation. It doesn't seem like it because it's a flashback to the past, but it's something that other teams aren't doing that I think will benefit the Cardinals. And when you look at the broad scheme of it, most of what's happening is for two reasons, right? Teams are trying to prevent injuries, but that's not working. Pitchers are getting hurt at record levels.
Yeah.
These reductions in workloads and pitch counts that are strict pitch counts. I think you need to monitor pitch counts. But every guy's different. There's no reason why 100 is the same for one guy as it is for another. It's just a round number, and human beings like round numbers. It doesn't carry any weight.
100 isn't the same one game to the next either.
No.
Yeah.
100 over seven innings is not the same as 105 innings.
Exactly.
And if anybody wants an analogy that you can kind of apply yourself, go try running 10 100-meter sprints, okay? Do it twice. One day, do them all within 20 minutes, all of them in 20 minutes. You run that, you take a minute break, and you go. Or let's say you do it in 10, 12 minutes. And then do it in an hour. Tell me which one's easier.
A little different.
Yeah, it's a lot different because the recovery time. So big innings are what you need to track, right? Heavy workload innings. So a 25, 30-pitch inning is a red flag. That's where you're starting to get fatigue that it's harder to recover from as you move forward. But the point is that they're trying to, by Major League Baseball teams, trying to prevent injuries, and it's not working. And then you're asking guys who break into the major leagues to do something that they've not done in the minor leagues. And in a lot of cases, you're taking guys, especially in college, who did those things, and then you're taking it away from them and then trying to put it back. And I can tell you, you know, I being involved in amateur baseball for 20 years, but specifically here in town for the last 17, 18 years, there are guidelines that you follow for young pitchers based on age. And these are guidelines that are informed by Dr. James Andrews. We all think we would agree is one of the foremost arm experts on the planet. And the formula he tends to use is five times your age plus or minus 10 for youth pitchers. So for a 14-year-old pitcher, that's the age that I coach, 14 times five is 70 plus or minus 10. So if it's going easy, maybe you extend out to 80. If it's a little bit rougher, maybe it's down to 60. But if 14-year-olds, according to Dr. James Andrews, can safely, easily, regularly throw 70 pitches a game, high school guys can safely, easily, regularly throw 90, 95 pitches a game, why can't a 22-year-old throw 105 or 110? But again, I think it's important to understand that every guy is different. Some guys are going to tap out around 80, 85. Some guys are going to be able to go 120 with no problem. And this is, to me, an area of innovation that can benefit you. If you can be one of the teams that develops actual starting pitchers that can get you 180, 190, 200 innings, that'll help.
I talked to Quinn Matthews at the end of the season. And for those who don't know, Quinn Matthews, minor league pitcher of the year this year, one of the top prospects in the organization. The thing of everything we said, the thing that most stuck out to me was he told me that college baseball and summer baseball did not prepare him for professional baseball.
Yeah, it's different.
He was not ready to go through that grind.
Because it's not every fifth day.
It's right.
At those levels.
It's really important that this guy realizes that so he can adjust to it. If the Cardinals treat him with kid gloves, well, then college baseball and summer baseball does prepare him for right. what he would have been going through because he wouldn't have been being asked to go this far. So by the Cardinals trying to push him, and he threw a lot of innings this mm-hmm. year, he learned about himself, okay, I'm not ready to do this.
Right.
And now he can react to that. And that, I think that is a tangible explanation of why this is all very
smart
important.
Stanford guy right there, yeah. too, who understands. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's the thing. In college, as a starting pitcher, you pitch once a week. It's not every fifth day. Like, he was a Friday starter. Mm-hmm. He's going to pitch every Friday. And that's something that happens with the players that come over from Japan, too. You know, like Shohei Ohtani, Yu Darvish when he came over, Yamamoto with the Dodgers. They pitched, I think it was every sixth day, something like that. And that's an adjustment that they have to make. But you can't just, unless you're those guys. Those guys are coming over as full-blown pros, right?
And that, grown men.
And grown-ass yeah. men, right. And that's where I think the college guys, they're grown men. They are grown men. But you have to let them do it. To be able to do it. Does that, you know, see what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to hit. And this is one of the things you have to do with young hitters, too. This is something I think we're going to see a lot of for the Cardinals next year. You're not going to get better at hitting major league pitching unless you're hitting major league pitching.
Right.
You have to suffer through some of the difficulties. Milwaukee showed us that with Jackson Chourio this year.
I'm sure they are very thankful they just let him struggle
yes.
for 2 months.
And again, it's easy to do when you're in first place and you're winning. It's a little harder to do when you're fighting for your place. And that's why the Cardinals' position on next year, how they're approaching it, is going to matter a lot. Are you going to allow for it? It sounds like they will. It sounds like next year, hey, we got to figure these guys out. We got to help them figure it out. They're not going to get better hitting major league pitching by facing minor league pitching.
Right.
You got to do it here.
Yeah, and we've seen Jordan Walker. There's nothing he can gain at AAA at this point.
Nope, he needs 600 plate appearances in the majors.
Now, I think there was some value. I think it got so bad for Nolan Gorman at the big league level. I thought there was value in just getting him out of here and getting him to AAA. But the value wasn't in being at AAA. The value was being
the mental break.
Not being in the big leagues.
Right, the mental break, yeah.
It's different, but it can be an important thing.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing about player development is that the whole push needs to be able to do the things at the major league level that you need to do. Doesn't matter if you're a defender. Doesn't matter if you're a hitter. You're talking about if you're a pitcher. If you're going to be a pitcher and the teams all want, right? What do we hear all the time? We got to cover innings. We got to cover innings. Well, if you don't have at least a few starting pitchers that can go get you 180, 200 innings by themselves, you're now going to be losing quality to get those innings, because you're going to be reverting to your seventh, eighth, and ninth best starters to cover innings, or you're going to put it all in your bullpen and you're going to burn your bullpen out, right? So when you look at the importance of it, you're never getting, most teams are not going to have five guys that are going to go get you 180 plus innings. But if you have three that can get you a .180, .190, or .200, now you're working ahead of the game compared to a lot of other franchises.
So I'll finish you with this, and I want to bring this back to Tinkens, because I love the idea of guys being able to go deep into games and pitch a lot of innings. You cannot increase your workload too much from 1 year to the next without really increasing the chance
for
injury.
The number that Dave Duncan and Tony La Russa used to talk about is like 20 to 30 innings a year is the most you want to go up.
So right now...
And I think they were pretty smart.
I would agree 100%. I mean, you're asking for Tommy John surgery if you...
Or
if
shoulder or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
So... Hence's season high came last year when he got almost to 100. He has said his goal was to get to 100. He got to 96. This year he was back dealing with injuries once again. He didn't even get to 80. A guy that you expect to be a major league starter, I think minimum you have to see a path to 160. That's the number that I look at. If you can find
it. 150 if you're a fifth starter.
Okay.
Still, but yeah, that range.
He's at 80. He's at 80 and never above 96. Of everybody that this, what Cardinals are doing in the minor leagues can apply to, it has to apply to him because he's got stuff right now.
Yes, he
that
does.
Probably plays at the big league level. And maybe that results in them just eventually moving him to the bullpen.
Yeah.
But he's what, 2 years
Easy.
Minimum?
But maybe you take the time. I mean, like, there's two ways to go about it, right? Here and here's again why the shift in philosophy is going to be interesting and important. If every year it's about how do we win this year because that's what we're selling out to do, then that guy probably helps you a lot more move into the bullpen.
Yeah.
Because you can use that stuff. That's high-end stuff. That's mid to upper 90s with a good breaking ball and a changeup that can work. That's a guy that can help you win major league games in 2025 and 2026. But he probably won't be ready to carry a full starter's workload until 2027. Now, that doesn't mean you can't spot start him at times next year and maybe give him half a year in the big leagues the year after that, or at least regulate those innings. But this gives you the opportunity, instead of saying we need the talent now, we can just let him work. So maybe next year you get him up to 130. And then the year after that, you get up to 145, 150. Well, then after that, you're clear. But it's going to take time to do that with a player who they've been very careful with.
Even 130 next year is a push when he's at 80. Probably is.
But they could also argue that, because I don't think he had arm injuries this year, did he?
I don't think so.
So you could argue that his arm was built up to go to 110 this year, and maybe you do. But again, it's an if. The point is that if you want him to be a starter, which is where he would have the longest term impact, the biggest impact, right? A top three starter in the rotation is worth more than a closer. Not even close. Go look at closer salaries and number three starter salaries, and you tell me which one's more valuable.
Yeah.
We all know it's the number three starter.
There's a reason Jordan Hicks wanted to be a starter.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you think that if you think that Hentz can be a top three starter in your major league rotation, even if it's 2 or 3 years down the road, then stay on that path, because you don't have to really rush anything right now. And if you find yourself in, look at Detroit this year, you find yourself in an unexpected position, or you find yourself in a good spot at the end of the year, why can't he come up late in the year and be thrown in the pen like Jackson Jobe has been for Detroit?
Yeah. And if he's not in the big leagues this upcoming season, I think it's a clear disappointment.
Which one?
Hence.
Again, depends to me. It all depends. What's going on? How healthy is he? How's he pitching? What are your needs? But yeah, if you're competitive late in the year and you could use that jolt at the back end of the pen to limit his workload, sure, get him here.
That's Kevin Wheeler. Good to see you. Have a great weekend.
You too, buddy.
We'll take a break. We'll wrap up this edition of Gravar Sports Open Line in just a moment right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. I'll tell you what, if you can, and I know weather's going to be pretty nice and you might have things to do with the family and everything, but enjoy the sports weekend. What a fantastic weekend it is. Playoff baseball continuing on. We've got a game number 5 tomorrow in the ALDS to see if it's going to be Cleveland or Detroit matching up against the Yankees. We're going to have the NLCS getting underway on Sunday. The college football schedule this weekend, man, there are some really, really good games. Ohio State, Oregon, that matches up number 2 against number 3. You've got the Red River rivalry game with Texas and Oklahoma set to go against each other. Just some really, really good LSU and Ole Miss. That's a matchup of two teams that are currently in the top 15. So really good games. Missouri, an opportunity for them to get right going to UMass. Illinois, we'll see what they're able to do. We were just talking about that a little while ago. They are home against Purdue. And it's still, even though I believe in Illinois, I think that number 23 national ranking is totally and completely legit. But anybody can beat anybody in college football. It's a home game against a conference opponent that you're supposed to win. So if you're Illinois, go prove to everybody that you are who you look to have been so far this year, and go take care of business against Purdue. So should be a great weekend, baseball and football. And obviously, we'll see what happens the rest of tonight with the Blues. And then they're going to take the weekend off before they open up the home portion of their schedule coming up next weekend, or next week, I should say. They're going to play their first home game coming up on Tuesday when they match up against Minnesota. They're going to have a bunch of home games coming up. They play these first three games on the road. You'd love to see them win tonight. You'd love to see them get some points tonight. But I'll tell you what, already coming away with 2 wins on a West Coast road trip to open up the season in many ways, and not just because they're playing in Las Vegas, in many ways, their action tonight, they're kind of playing with house money. This has already been a very successful first road trip of the year. And it just kind of feels like, yeah, these West Coast road trips during the season, sometimes they can get you. They come at a bad time. It's just, it's tough travel. by having this right at the beginning of the year, I think there's some value in it. You're going to have a little bit more pep in your step here at this point in the season. The road trip might not beat you down quite as much. Now, playing a back-to-back tonight and going to Vegas, obviously, this is a tough matchup tonight. But even if they lose tonight, to get 2 out of 3 wins, that's a good start to the season. And it's only 2 games, and you try not to make too much out of a tiny sample size. I talk about sample size all the time, maybe too often. You try not to make too much when it comes to sample size, for sure. But I do think more highly of the Blues right now than I did, say, Tuesday afternoon at 2:30, just before that game was set to get underway against Seattle. I really like what I've seen and their ability to fight back, the ability to not give up. It was fun watching them go into with the extra attacker and everything last night / this morning. The game ended at like 12:15 in the morning against San Jose. There was just, you should have energy early on in the season, but to see them be down 3 goals in a little bit of a hornet's nest. It was the first game of the year for San Jose, so they're playing on their home ice. It's their home opener. There's definitely energy in the building. They've got some young guys that everybody's really excited about there in San Jose. I don't know how good that team is actually going to be, but yesterday was one of those days where there was a lot of excitement about what was going on, and the Blues were just able to kind of stay the course, weather the storm, whatever stupid sports cliche you want to use, and eventually they came away with the win. So, good stuff going on right now in sports. Enjoy the weekend one way or another, and we will talk to you again coming up on Monday for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.